Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, my fellow Liberty lovers, wherever and whenever you're tuning in from. Today is Tuesday, March 19th, 2024, and this is episode 34 of the Living with Freedom Show. I'm Amber S., bringing you a vision of what living a life of freedom can look like physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and in every aspect of life. This show is brought to you by Living with Freedom Ministries, an unincorporated private ministry and church where I help people discover and fulfill their God-given purpose specifically through the creation of their own private ministry. Right now, I invite you to share the show with at least one friend, particularly if you have friends that are church leaders, because we are going to drop some truth bombs about religious liberties, y'all, and other liberties that tie in, but particularly on religious liberties. So please take a moment, copy the show link, or share the social media post so we can get truth in more hands, because just like money in the hands of good people does more good, truth in the hands of good people also does more good. Additionally, if you have ever benefited from the Living with Freedom show or any of the Living with Freedom ministries, please consider a donation through PayPal using the livingwithfreedom@protonmail.com email. Your support helps us continue to share truth with the capital G. All right. FYI, I'm not exactly sick, but I am dealing with a bit of respiratory stuff. I was at a full-day conference at a hotel on Saturday, and I'm honestly pretty sensitive to chemicals, especially synthetic chemicals, cleaners, and fragrances. So being around like 100 plus mostly old people who's, I hate to be this kind of person, but like mainstream people whose senses are kind of going and need to triple up on the amount of fragrance they use or laundry detergent they use or fabric softener they use. I digress, but like my throat and lungs are definitely in recovery. Plus, it's been incredibly dry here in Wisconsin and Minnesota. So while I'm not technically sick, I am experiencing dis-ease. All right, we're going to start with the holiday of the day today. And when I saw this, I had to pick it. This is a fun holiday, you guys. I am going to kind of bring a healthy aspect to it, but this is just a fun one. Today is National Chocolate Caramel Day, and I always get my word of the earth, my holiday of the day from nationaltoday.com. So if you go to nationaltoday.com/National Chocolate Caramel Day with hyphens between each word, you'll see where I'm reading from, but I wanted to just read the last paragraph of the history section, excuse me, because it just gave a really good description of kind of the history of the day, where we really got chocolate caramels from, etc. So it says, during the 1800s, when all major candy manufacturers in America were making traditional hard candies, Milton Hershey's Lancaster Caramel Company was one of the few companies that focused on making chocolate-covered caramels. So yes, Hershey, the same guy that makes or that came up with our beloved Hershey bar, also came up with chocolate-covered caramels. He focused on making chocolate-covered caramels instead of hard candies. But it was in 1893 when these chocolate-covered caramels really became popular. Hershey was so greatly influenced by the machines used by the Germans for making chocolate bars that he adapted the same technology and started mass-producing chocolate-covered caramels. I will note that I corrected the last part. Whoever typed up the history on that website. Oops, and had a spoonerism, basically, and it said caramel covered chocolate, so it's supposed to be chocolate covered caramel. So I need to double check that things are working on my end. Okay. I have the screens flip-flop today because I'm going to be pulling up a lot of links. Today is going to be much more of a learning show, not just a talk show, which I had to do anyways. But with pulling up so many different links, I'm going to need to make sure that all of my links are together and in order. And it's going to be a lot, you guys. It's going to be awesome, but it's going to be a lot. So, back to the show. I happen to love unsalted chocolate-covered caramels. The sea salt ones or the salted ones can go right in the trash, in my opinion. I hate mixing salty and sweet. It's like one of my pet peeves. I don't get it. I don't understand the attraction of salted treats. Salted chocolate, salted caramel. I don't get it. Not my thing. But I found a healthy recipe that takes the care of the choco caramel craving and doesn't ruin my whole foods eating intentions, or at least doesn't ruin it too much. It's basically the crunchy, and when I say crunchy, I mean crunchy as in granola eating healthy lifestyle kind of crunchy, not as in like chomp chomp crunchy. So this is basically the crunchy version of a Girl Scout Samoa cookie, if you've ever had them. That cookie went by two different names depending on which factory was manufacturing them. So there is another name for the Samoa cookie, but if you search Girl Scout Samoa, S-A-M-O-A cookie, you're going to find it. It's basically like a caramel and coconut disc-shaped cookie drizzled with chocolate. And if you like all of those things, all those flavors, you're going to love this kind of cookie. Anyways, so the recipe, I adapted a little bit, so technically it is my own. In a food processor, you want to blend 8 pitted dates. I prefer the medjool, I think is how you say it, M-E-D-J-O-O-L, dates. Apparently they have the highest health benefits in the date family. Maybe it's just marketing and it's just overpriced fancy dates. I don't know, but they're good, so I buy them. Anyway, the recipe is you blend 8 pitted dates, 2 teaspoons of water, a pinch of fine Himalayan salt. While you're blending that, because honestly, you're going to have to scrape down the sides quite a bit. It's very sticky. So while you're doing that, toast some shredded coconut at 325 for 5 to 6 minutes, stirring halfway through until desired state of golden goodness. And then you add that toasted coconut to the date water mixture and blend just until the coconut incorporates. I like to have chunks of coconut, so I don't want to blend it till it's all a puree basic or like a paste. I like a little, chunk of coconut in there. And then with wet fingers, you make roughly 12 balls of this mixture. Put it on a baking sheet with parchment paper, and then use a glass to smash them flat. You are going to want a thin spatula to remove the flattened dough from the bottom of the glass, because for me, spraying the bottom of the glass did not work. I mean, dates are really sticky. If you've ever cooked with them, eaten them, they're just a very thick, sticky food. So it makes sense that it sticks to the bottom of the cup. Anyways, so now you've got these flat discs of cookie, or rather cookie dough. If you want it to look like the traditional Samoa cookie appearance, then take a medium straw and poke a hole in the middle. I don't care what they look like, so I didn't waste any by cutting out the center. I skipped that part. Then you want to freeze them for about an hour. During the last bit of that freezing time, you melt 3/4 cup chocolate chips over steaming water, aka a double boiler. The recipe or the video I adapted mine from, she's definitely a millennial or younger because she said steaming water instead of a double boiler, which I giggled at. But anyways, you're going to want to melt the chocolate chips and then dip the bottoms of these frozen cookies, because it's not really dough. You don't have to bake this. This is a no-bake cookie. There's nothing that requires baking. So you dip the bottom of this frozen cookie into the melted chocolate. Put it back on the parchment paper. You might want to spray it this time. Maybe not. Then drizzle more chocolate on top and then refreeze for about another hour. If you've never had dates before or you've just eaten them plain or straight, when you bake with them, when you make desserts or treats like this with them, dates do have a very caramely type flavor. So when you pair it with the coconut and the chocolate, it ends up just super nummy. You can honestly add flax or chia seeds to this too. Chia seeds would give it a really nice crunch. So if you're actually worried about it sticking to the parchment paper, something you might want to think about doing is just sprinkling a solid layer of chia seeds on the bottom of your parchment paper. Hint, use a baking pan with sides, please. Otherwise, you're going to have chia seeds rolling everywhere. but lay a flat layer of them, and then when you set down the cookie dipped in the chocolate will, I forgot to mute that, I'm sorry. The chocolate will end up resting on and solidifying on and in the chia seeds, so it shouldn't stick as bad that way then either. Then, after you freeze them again, enjoy. You can also use dairy-free, gluten-free chocolate chips, but I just had Toll House. Jackie, don't come for me. I have a friend who, she has a PhD in naturopathy, and I adore her. I love her. She is one of my bestest friends. And she is like hyper-vigilant about healthy eating, which I respect that, and I do the best I can with what I have. And sometimes Toll House is just what I can muster. Okay, y'all? I'm not perfect. I don't claim to be perfect. From Thrive Market, I believe you can get dairy and gluten-free chocolate chips. So there are places you can get them pretty easily. I just didn't. I wanted it sooner than I could get an order in. Anyways, I also want to add that these treats are awesome for pregnant and nursing moms. Let me see if I can find the link. I have about 17 links open right now. I might have closed that one. Dang it. All right. According to thebump.com, they have an article called When to Start Eating Dates in Pregnancy. And I remember when I was pregnant, learning that dates were pretty important at the time. I mean, this is almost 10 years ago now, you guys. 9 years ago. No. 10 years ago, I was pregnant. So information has vastly improved, even from 10 years ago. The reason dates are so awesome during and after pregnancy is they are jam-packed with vitamins and nutrients, including fiber and folate. Folate is the natural from nature version of folic acid, which is one of the vitamin Bs. Folic acid is a synthetic version. It is not bioavailable. Our bodies do not recognize it the way they do folate. So if you can get folate naturally, which it's very high dates, and you can also get folate in lentils. There's a lot of other foods too, but those two are key. they're also really high in, it scrolled away from me. Dates are also very high in magnesium, iron, and calcium, all of which can be a struggle for some pregnant women, due to, you know, just nutrient depletion, because you're literally eating for two. And if you don't keep your amount high enough in the food you're eating, it'll start depleting from your body in terms of your bones and other things. So keeping up those trace minerals and nutrients and vitamins is absolutely key. If you're pregnant, and this is a little bit of a TMI, but I also have done classes on this exact topic, so it doesn't bother me. possibly not safe for work, I guess, so mute the next 15, 30 seconds. If you deal with constipation, whether you're pregnant or not, dates are really good because they're so high in fiber. So FYI, and if you're dealing with the opposite problem and you're eating a lot of dates or a lot of fibrous food, maybe tone it down a little bit. I mean, I'm not your doctor. I'm not your preferred care provider, but, you know, a lot of these things can be kind of common sense. And I don't believe you have to have a doctor to ask every single question to. Like, a lot of doctors will make fun of patients for having a Google degree. And yet, if you ask a doctor about a specific thing, 9 times out of 10, they're going to go right to Google too, or Google Scholar, or PubMed, all of which are on the freaking internet. So don't worry about having a Google degree or whatever. I don't use Google, but people particularly who are dealing with a very specific thing, they can be the biggest expert of their own thing more than any doctor, because doctors have specialties, yes. So your general care practitioner is not going to know about your myasthenia gravis unless you educate them. So, or any other illness or dis-ease. I just use that one in particular because I know someone who deals with it, and most of the care providers she's had to do a lot of work with because they were very ignorant about her particular dis-ease. And is it right? Not really, but there are so many different ailments in the world that you can't possibly become an expert in all of them. It's literally impossible. Just like it's impossible for a lawyer to know all aspects of law, every single case law, every single whatever. And that's why lawyers have specialties and doctors have specialties. And there's the internet where you can find anything for yourself. It's good to verify, though. I digress. There's some evidence also about dates potentially helping with the labor process. So if you don't want to be induced, some say you might want to start eating more dates around 37 weeks. So, again, not medical advice. You're a grown-up. You can figure this stuff out for yourself. All right. We are going to cruise on because it's already 20 after. We're going to cruise on to the word of the day. And this one I pulled from Bouvier's Law Dictionary. I am starting to really enjoy that one. I don't think I'm always going to use Bouvier's because it doesn't have quite as extensive of a list of definitions. But it does seem to be a little bit more extensive in the definitions themselves. Not necessarily in all cases, but it definitely has its purpose, and so I do want to highlight it more. Give me 1 second to take a drink. So today's word of the day, and yes, I only chose one, is abbreviation. In practice, the omission of some words or letters in writing, as when fieri facius is written F-I period, F-A period. And that is a Latin phrase, so don't worry about not knowing what that is. The second part of the definition is, in writing contracts, it is the better practice to make no abbreviations. But in recognizances and many other contracts, they are used. And then it does go on to, I think, give an example. If you want, though, If you've been digging into Black's Law Dictionary, go get, oh my goodness, I even have a lozenge, that's how crazy it is. I'm going to try to speak a little bit lower. Hopefully it's not going to impact your ability to hear me. If so, maybe just let me know. But I think by me trying to talk so loud, it is making my voice go way faster. In Bouvier's Law Dictionary, in this section on abbreviation, it has a whole section, several pages worth, on abbreviations. And I thought that was pretty nifty because even in Black's Law Dictionary, after or in the middle of most definitions, it references specific cases that like further define it or clarify it. And it's a bunch of letters and numbers that to the average person make no sense. With that list of abbreviations, it's like your decoder, which is super awesome. For instance, one of the abbreviations in a lot of case law that I see is ECLR. So I looked it up in Bouvier's, and it means English Common Law Reports, sometimes cited ing, like ENG, Com Law Rep. So ECLR is English Common Law Reports. So I thought that was kind of interesting. All right, we're going to pause for probably a long commercial break to give my voice a tiny little bit of a break. And then when we get back, we are going to dive into the topic, which is primarily for church leaders. But if you go to church, if you are a spiritual person who wants to establish a church or ministry according to your firmly and strongly held beliefs, stay tuned because this is going to be really important for you. All right, we'll be right back for segment two.
Please check out the Barefoot is Legal radio show right here on Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, that is 10:30 a.m. to noon Pacific Time, as we show you all about your barefoot rights and living a barefoot lifestyle. And for more information about the 501c3 nonprofit Barefoot is Legal, please check out barefootislegal.org.
Do you love the outdoors? Do you want to help make a difference for the planet? Then get involved in Collectively Rewilding. Collectively Rewilding is a movement to restore degraded ecosystems and reinvigorate sustainable traditions almost lost by working together. It's based on the idea that we can achieve more by working together than we can by working alone. Sharing the skill sets we have built over the years with each other and providing the community support we all need when there is so much work to be done in finding a sustainable future. To join our community here in Collectively Rewilding, go to www.collectivelyrewilding.com. Let's bring nature back into our lives in a community built for the wild in all of us.
Looking for something different? Looking for something fun? Join Dan every Monday on the Freedomizer Network, 9 to 10:30 Pacific, noon to 1:30 Eastern, for Common Sense with the Educated Redneck, Dan Ellison, the show about everything and nothing at all.
Diana from Delivering the Truth and Exposing the Lies. Join Russ and myself every Thursday night at 7:30 p.m. until 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time while we deliver the truth about what's really going on in the world. You don't want to miss our show. See you then.
You know what I think you should do? I think you should join us for Dynamic Word Bible Studies, where I am always hosting. My name is Felicia DeRozier, and I have two amazing co-hosts.
cross the favorite.
You wish.
This is Mariah, the real favorite child.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm.
We spent a lot of time learning about the Bible and possibly a little time learning about humility. That would be awesome, right?
Yeah,
Mariah. We air live every Wednesday from 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time to 10:30. Right now we're going through the book of Romans, but we're going to start moving into the Gospel of John. We're going to learn about Jesus. We're going to learn about living and walking in the Spirit and learning to be a little humble with those that we live with. It's going to be a great time. I can't wait for you to join us. Right, guys?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. We'll see you then.
Bye.
Bye.
We talk a lot about the kingdom here, and we talk a lot about what most churches are afraid to talk about or don't even know to talk about, which is what the first century church was really doing. But just talking about it is not enough. We encourage everybody to join us in their local neighborhoods, in their local communities, to find out more about what they can do to seek the kingdom of God and His righteousness. Gather with others who are already starting this road or starting to turn around and do things differently. Join us on thelivingnetwork.org or at hisholychurch.org. Go to the network links or go to preparingyou.com. Join the network there. It's all the same. And we'll try to hook you up with people in your local area. They will not be perfect. They don't walk on water. They are not necessarily saints. But they are talking about seeking the kingdom of God and His righteousness. And join us on Facebook. Facebook.com, His Holy Church, all one word. Join us there. We'll give you updates so you can start doing some studying and thinking about these things and start looking into these things for yourselves. But it's just not enough to sit and listen or to talk about or to say. You must become a doer of the word.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever and whenever you're tuning in from, my fellow Liberty lovers. This is Amber S. from Living with Freedom Ministries, reminding you to tune in on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Central, noon Pacific time, for the Living with Freedom show, where we'll embrace what living with freedom can look like physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and in everyday life. That's 2 p.m. Central, noon Pacific, here on Freedomizer Radio.
All right, guys, we are back with segment two of the Living in Freedom show, as I have here in my mouth, of course. Having three dogs kind of does that. Today, we are going to share some truth bombs about the rights that we have, our religious liberties, particularly as they pertain to churches and ministries. And I'm going to specifically be addressing the unincorporated church today, or the unincorporated ministry. In my vernacular, those are synonymous because ministries where two or more are gathered, that's where Jesus is, that's where God is. So, like, we are the church. The church is not just the building, right? So anyone serving, anyone in ministry is serving the church. So I realized that a lot of people simply don't understand what our rights are. And that's okay. Like, I am not pointing fingers today because I realize when you don't know what you don't know what you're missing. How can you be at fault for that? And I am going to say there is a difference between ignorance and, frankly, stupidity. Like, when you know better, you should do better. If you know better and you still don't do better, that's where we start to cross that line into what are you doing with yourself, right? What are you doing with your time? How are you really serving your purpose? But the system has been so corrupted for so long that it's been generations since we truly knew and understood our rights. Our founding fathers knew them, but even shortly after them, things already started to get messed up. So most of us already know that there is an inherent sense that churches are simply different than other entities. And the reason is is the hierarchy of law. Those who believe in a higher power, they're going back to that scriptural authority. So whether you call it higher power, God, or creator, or even universe, honestly, like, there is a higher power that is the source of all creation. For those of us who are believers in the Christian version of God, following the Bible, we know that scriptural authority, which is God's law, is at the top of the food chain, because God is the creator of everything. And since the created cannot govern the creator, we know that scriptural authority and God's law comes at the very top. I just came across this book. I have not read it. I have not read any reviews on it yet. I sent it to my friend David King and Sarah. Sarah P has been, actually, we have two Sarah P. So there's Sarah Poet and then the other Sarah P. The other Sarah P is definitely a biblical scholar and constitutional scholar. She's just awesome. Both Sarahs are awesome. They're awesome in different ways. I should say that. Sarah P, the one that's the constitutional and the biblical scholar, I sent it to her too. Neither one of them have read this book that I'm referencing or going to reference. So I propose that maybe we do a mini book club. And now that I'm sharing this out loud with you guys, maybe we make like a signal group or like a Telegram group or something where we collectively study this book together. Anyways, the book is called Kingdom Politics. The paper version of the Bible, it's actually a book study with video access, and that one's called Government from God's Perspective. If you get the Audible version, it's a little bit different in terms of the subtitle, so I'll kind of let you know. But if you're interested, I guess shoot me an email, livingwithfreedom@protonmail.com. Did I not mute that phone? Oh, my goodness. Nope, I didn't. Good thing it hasn't been going off the whole time. The reason I bring up this book is we believers, Christians, kingdom citizens, we need to re-educate ourselves on what being a kingdom citizen and a kingdom builder truly means. We're delegates. We are here on a mission from God to build a kingdom on earth. And yet a lot of Christians teach that we're not supposed to get involved in politics or government. And yet, most of the main characters in our Bible were heavily involved in government and politics. I mean, Jesus is called king for a reason, right? But Moses and David and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, like all of these main characters in the Bible, were high-ranking individuals. So the notion that we as believers should not be getting ourselves involved in earthly government is honestly, frankly, nonsense. Now, that's not where I'm trying to take this talk today, but it need to be said. Or I guess I should say I thought it needed to be said. If you're a longtime listener of the show, you've heard me talk about the hierarchy of law before. The hierarchy of law in terms of believers starts with, at the top, with scriptural authority, which is God's law. When he created us, he created we the people, and he gave us our natural God-given rights. These rights come from God, not from government, not from man, from our creator. And then we the people created our states through the creation of our state constitution. And remember, if the created can't govern the creator, we the people govern the state. through the state constitution, we gave them limited powers that were delegated to the state. And then our delegated representatives, our elected representatives, created the federal, the U.S. Constitution, which had even more limited power delegated to the federal government. And then finally, after that, statutes and regulations are nothing more than the color of law. What that means is that they sort of act as a means to interpret and clarify the law, but they're not the law themselves. And that's where a lot of us also are kind of missing some understanding here, is that statutes and regulations are not the law themselves. And we're going to get into this a little bit deeper when we get into case law. But I want you to remember Marbury versus Madison. The summary of it is this. Any law repugnant to the Constitution is null and void, as well as any court or agency. So if the existence of a court or the existence of an agency is literally contradicting the Constitution, void. That's huge, you guys. I'm not going to go into those implications, but pretty much every 3- and 4-letter organization is contrary to the Constitution. Now, side note, I want to remind everyone that the states were really designed to be independent nation states like England, like Spain, like France, and that the federal government was really to act, in my words, more like the United Nations is supposed to be, which is a delegacy on behalf of the collective independent states. And this means that the federal government lawfully has no authority in the states. But we the people, need to be educating and electing constitutional sheriffs to help us keep them out. A government is not going to self-regulate, even if there's laws in place for their regulation. We have to set those boundaries and keep them. So a great resource on constitutional sheriffs is Chris Ann Hall's Non-Compliant to the Sheriff. You can access both the first non-compliant movie and the second one at libertyfirstsociety.com/non-compliant movie. No hyphens, no spaces or anything. Non-compliant movie is just one word. I suggest buying it and having like a movie night at your house. It's that important. I also want to read the last paragraph of the Declaration of Independence, because this paragraph alone tells us the intention behind each of the states of the lowercase United States of America. The last paragraph says, sorry. It says, we therefore, the representatives of this lowercase United uppercase States of America, in general Congress assembled, appealing to the supreme judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do in the name and by authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these united colonies are and of right ought to be free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain, notice they called Great Britain a state, and that they're referring to the United States as them, plural, meaning each state, between them and the state of Great Britain is totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states, they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and to do all the other acts and things which independent states may of right do. And for the support of this declaration, with the firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. I didn't highlight all of the words that I wanted to, but I did highlight most of them. So the fact that united here is lowercase, and then only states of America is uppercase, means that the states is the emphasis, not the united part. That only changed during the Lincoln era. The fact that it says these united colonies, meaning it's referencing each one as part of the collective group of them, but not as an entity of itself. And then it says ought to be free and independent states. Again, states plural, not a single nation as we see the USA today. It also says they, as in the many states, between them, again, the many states, and the state of Great Britain. State is synonymous with nation. So even our Declaration of Independence and our Founding Fathers recognize that each of these colonies developed into states were designed to be independent nations. And that the federal government was only there to act on behalf of the collective group. Not to control them, not to consolidate them into one single nation. I saw a Facebook video, a reel the other day, where this British dude was giving like the ultimate comparison between England and America. And he mentioned how he had been in the United States for like 11 days or 2 weeks or something, I don't remember. And how he had only traveled through or visited 8 states. And he made a comment that each state felt like visiting a country. And I'm like, wow, how insightful that a British person acknowledged and recognized that each state is like its own nation because that's how it was designed. If I can find the link again, I think I shared it with one of my British friends, but I will share it again in, or not share it again, but I'll share it in the show notes so you can see it. It was good. Going back to scriptural authority, I highly recommend, and no, this is not a referral or an affiliate, I just really love this resource, that everyone, especially kingdom citizens, all get and read a copy of the Founder Bible, which you can get at thefoundersbible.com. You can get in multiple forms, from an app to the heirloom edition or several options in between. The reason I recommend it is that David Barton is one of the co-creators of it, and he included so much from the founders and framers, and also a lot of history of how significant the Bible was in terms of building this country, both the leading up to and after, during its, you know, its early days. So highly recommend that book. All right. Man. I picked a really bad day to do a lot of reading or just have a show, having a show by myself. In fact, I'm going to turn off my heater because it's drying the air out even more. So I apologize that this show is filled with me coughing and clearing my throat. I had intended it being a really awesome teaching tool, that I could use and share outside of the radio show. So we'll see. I'm probably going to have to redo it at some point. Anyways, I want to share the last bit of this segment and then the next segment as if I'm researching this with you. Again, to show you how it can be done. That research like this doesn't require a degree. Doesn't require you to be a professional researcher. Our founders and framers had the knowledge they did because they took it upon themselves to be a student for life. We're capable of that. It's just we have been, frankly, indoctrinated with entertainment so much from so young that often we find reading and studying not a hobby, but a chore. I want to help shift that because preparing for today's show was so much fun. It was also a little overwhelming when you see that each case that I'm going to be studying later and reading about later has many, many, many cases that it quotes, and you could search each of those and each of those and each of those. So it can become overwhelming, but that's part of the fun. Like, when you have a notebook or a Word document these days or some sort of notes app, it's a lot of fun to share the link for this case and then copy the links for each of the cases it references and then go check out each of those cases and see what other cases. You might start with one case and end up with 50. And that's how powerful case law is that it builds and builds and builds on each other. But first, I want to start out with the U.S. Constitution, the First Amendment. And instead of opening an 18th link, I'm going to grab my book, which is called The U.S. Constitution and Other Key American Writings. It looks like it's leather-bound. It's definitely pleather. But it's helpful and pretty handy, not going to lie. All right, page 36 of this book, not page 70, I'm looking for 36. Here we go. And then over to find the amendments. There's articles. Oh, shoot. Apparently I need to search for the Bill of Rights by itself. Hopefully, maybe. Bill of Rights. All right, page 111. There we go. Amendment 1 of the Bill of Rights, which is part of the Constitution. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. Now I'm going to pause here. Chris Anton Hall does an awesome thing where she shows that a lot of these articles and amendments can also be used in the negative too. So Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, but Congress shall also make no law denying an establishment of religion. Like the way they wrote it, it can be used in the positive and the negative. So that's pretty cool. Anyways, going on, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the freedom of press, or the right of the people to peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Now there's five rights here: religion, speech, press, assembly, petition for redress. Today we're talking about religion. So that first part, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Almost every one of these cases I'm going to cite today, not all, but almost everyone references this particular part of the First Amendment, but pretty much all of them do reference the First Amendment in part, whether it's the religious part or speech or freedom to peaceably assemble. So I want you to take note of that part. Now, during the Johnson Amendment, which was roughly during the Civil Rights era, they realized two things. When the IRS tax codes were being created, they had to allow for churches, which they knew, Congress knew they could not create any laws for. They knew they had to be able to allow churches to get an EIN for banking purposes. They could not restrict that. And so they had to create the 508C1A tax code. And I'm going to pull that up on my phone again to reduce the number of links I have on my computer. The 508C1A tax code is a special rule with respect to Section 501C3 organizations. So it's really a subcategory of 501C3. So 508C1A, 508, that's the heading. C is the exceptions. 1, mandatory exceptions. And A, churches, their integrated auxiliaries, and conventions or associations of churches. Or any organization which is not a private foundation and the gross receipts of which in each taxable year are normally not more than $5,000. I want to note that it says that churches have a mandatory exception. There's a difference between exemption, asking permission to not have to follow, versus exception, meaning they have automatic rule that they don't have to follow it. Oh my goodness, if I had known that my voice was going to do this today, I would have rescheduled the call. So thank you guys for bearing with me. All right, so there's that tax code. The next one I'm going to share with you is 6033A3A. That one is under returns by exempt organizations. So we know, if you're familiar with 501c3, that they do still have to file a return. They don't have to pay in or get money back, but they do have to file a return. 6033A3A. So A is organizations required to file. Three is exceptions from filing. A, or it's actually A3A1, or I should have added that part. Exceptions from filing. A is mandatory exceptions, and I is churches, their integrated auxiliaries, and conventions or associations of churches. Okay. And actually, all three of these can apply. They're Roman numerals, so it's 1, 2, and 3. 1 is the church's part. 2, any organization other than private foundation. I'm going to skip the definitions and codes part. The gross receipts, which in each taxable year are normally not more than $5,000. Or 3, the exclusivity or the exclusively religious activities of any religious order. Our tax codes represent Congress acknowledging that they cannot regulate churches, you guys. When you create a tax or an EIN using the quote 508 tax code, so when you create an EIN using the tax code for your own incorporated church, in my words, it basically goes in right into the archives because there's nothing for them to do. There's nothing that they're allowed to see. They can't touch it. They, as in the IRS. We've had members and we've had other advisors directly contact IRS agents trying to find out information about their EIN that was made using the 508 tax code. And the agents can't find it, meaning they can't access it. in the agent's eyes, it doesn't exist because it's not in their jurisdiction. And that's how churches are supposed to be, you guys. They are not supposed to be regulating churches or religious organizations. The Constitution says so. The First Amendment says so. And Congress at the time actually made it so we had that exception to the rule. During the Civil Rights Movement, during the Johnson Amendment, the government realized that churches had so much lobbying power that they conned. They blackmailed and they coerced. And really, they lied to churches to make them become charities. A church is not a charity. A church does charity work, but it's not what it's called. It's being a good Christian. It's ministering to your community. They conned churches into becoming a charity so then they could regulate them and say you can't talk about politics and you can't do X, Y, Z and you have to follow certain rules. That's regulating a church. So if your church currently is a 501c3 and you're a liberty lover and you know that you're supposed to be following God's law, not man's law, shoot me an email, livingwithfreedom@protonmail.com or amber@livingwithfreedom.org. Let me help you convert your church into a free church instead of a state church. A free church is unincorporated using the 508c1a tax code. A state church is incorporated and uses 501c3, which is a charity. I also want to pull up some other codes. 18 U.S.C. 241, and I hope that's one I have here. Oh, that's 247. Shoot. Well, I guess I will use this one. So Title 18. Let's scroll down. Oh, it's, I have to go back to the title, to the publication. Of course it's going to be funny on me. Oh, I hate technology sometimes. All right, I just have to go back a few slides. Here we go. 247 is where we were, and we're going to 241 to start. All right, Title 18, USC 241 is conspiracy against rights. If two or more persons conspire to injure, oppress, threaten, or intimidate any person in any state, territory, or district in the free exercise or enjoyment of any right or privilege secured to him by the Constitution or laws of the United States, or because of his having so exercised the same, get the next part because it's not relevant to the conversation here, they shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 10 years or both, and if death results from the acts committed in violation of this section, or if such acts, including kidnapping or an attempt to kidnap, which is unlawful arrest, by the way, aggravated sexual abuse or an attempt to commit the blah, 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 or an attempt to kill, they shall be fined under this title or imprisoned for any term of years or both. For any term of years or for life or both, or may be sentenced to death. That's big, y'all. If someone is violating your free exercise or enjoyment of any right or privilege secured to you by the Constitution, which is your Bill of Rights, your first 10 amendments, those are your rights. There's more, but that's it. And most of them fall under that, under those 10 amendments. Federal crime then. And they can be fined or imprisoned or both. So take note of that 18 U.S.C. 241. We're going to go to 242. 242 is deprivation of rights under color of law. After this one, I'm going to do a short commercial break and then we'll come back for the third segment. But 18 U.S.C. 242 is deprivation of rights under color of law. Whoever under color of law, or no, under color of any law, statute, ordinance, regulation, or custom, willfully subjects any person in any state, territory, or district to the deprivation of any rights, privileges, or immunities secured or protected by the Constitution or laws of the United States, or to different punishments, pains, or penalties on account of such person being an alien or by reason of his color or race, that are prescribed for the punishments of citizens shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 1 year or both, and if bodily injury results from the acts committed in violation of the section, or if such acts include the use, attempted use, or threatened use of a dangerous weapon, explosives, or fire, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 10 years or both, and if death results, blah, 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 I just said that part, they shall be fined under this title or imprisoned for any term of years or for life or both, or maybe sentenced to death. When they talk about if bodily injury results from the acts committed in this violation or such acts include the use, attempted use, or threatened use of a dangerous weapon, if they bring an officer with them to deprive you of your rights, that is threatened use of a dangerous weapon, because every officer carries more than one dangerous weapon. Pew pew machine is not the only thing that they carry. FYI, know these rights, you guys, especially church leaders. You have rights. Defend them. Stand on them. Do not be bullied by man. We're to be in this world, but not of this world. That means that we need to defend our God-given rights. And yeah, we're going to be challenged when we do that. If we're not being challenged, that means we're complying. And if you're complying with man's law, you're being of this world. And God directly and specifically calls us not to do that. The next one I want to share is 18. While I pull this next one up, we're going to pause for a commercial break. When we come back, we're going to finish doing the last two codes. Actually, I might just do the 247 one and then jump right into case law. We'll see. Anyways, pausing for a commercial, and then when we get back, we will finish with segment three.
Would you like to take your power back by following the principles of the universal laws? Earth-based spirituality such as pantheonism, shamanism, and personal alchemy? Are you sick of giving your power away to power-hungry gurus, the corrupt government, the globalists, and realize you have a higher purpose on this planet? That you are gods and goddesses that need to snap out of amnesia and reclaim your birthright? We're Darren and Dr. Joanna Wells, the Double B, founder of the Gods of Amenti, psychic intuitives, transformation coaches, training others to uncover lost knowledge and reclaim their sovereignty. Here to guide you every Sunday at 6 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and Wednesday 4:30 p.m. to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on our show, Moving Beyond the Matrix, on freedomizerradio.com. Call-in number is 319-527-6208.
Hello, Freedomizers. I am Broccoli Man. When I am not fighting crime, I listen to the Proof Negative radio show.
I am the Wireta. Not only do I forbid you to listen to Freedomizer Radio and the Proof Negative radio show, I am going to demand you wear a mask and get your naked body scan. We need to protect the One World Government. You getting the real information hurts a crime syndicate. Do not listen to Proof Negative. You must now disrobe this instant so I can check your person for a constitution or cash money.
Anyway, listen to Proof Negative on Freedomizer Radio. Weeknights 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. FreedomizerRadio.com.
Global government, the mystery school, Agenda 2030, chemtrails and geoengineering, manufactured disasters.
We live in a time when awareness about current events and big media deception is critical to be prepared for the events that are rapidly descending upon us. This is Russ from Delivering the Truth and Exposing the Lies. Join Diana and me every Thursday night at 7:30 p.m. as we expose the truth big media keeps lying about.
Herbal medicine, the globalist real agenda, seen through the propaganda.
Thursday nights at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll see you there.
Collectively Rewilding is an online forum for learning, sharing, and teaching the skills needed to enhance our experience in the natural world. We're looking for the best mentors, guides, and instructors who can teach a variety of natural skill sets. If you've got something to share, we have the platform to help you make a difference for free. If you are more interested in learning and expanding your abilities in nature, please join us as a member to explore the world of rewilding. Join us at www.collectivelyrewilding.com today.
All right, welcome back, guys, to segment 3, and we are continuing to deep dive into our religious liberties and what protects them. Right before the break, we read through Title 18 USC, which is U.S. Code, 241 and 242. We're going to continue on with reading 247. I did not specifically highlight any sections, so I may read more than necessary, but just know that these things are here, and look at how quickly we're going through so much content. Okay. Yes, I happened to do some research prior to pull this stuff up, but with internet, this stuff doesn't take nearly as long as it would have prior to the internet. So it's a beautiful thing. All right, Title 18 USC 247 is damages to religious property, obstruction of persons and the free exercise of religious beliefs. Section A, whoever in any of the circumstances referred to in subsection B of this section, 1, intentionally defaces, damages, or destroys any religious real property because of the religious character of that property or attempts to do so, or 2, intentionally obstructs by force or threat of force any person in the enjoyment of that person's free exercise of religious beliefs or attempts to do so, shall be punished as provided in subsection C of this section. B says, the circumstances referred to in subsection A are that 1, in committing the offense, the defendant travels in interstate of foreign commerce or uses a facility of or instrumentality of interstate or foreign commerce in interstate of or foreign commerce. That one was hard. 2, in the case of an offense under subsection A1, the loss resulting from the defacement, damage, or destruction is more than $10,000. C, the punishment for a violation of subsection A of this section shall be 1, if death results from acts committed in violation of this section, or such acts include kidnapping, aka unlawful arrest, or an attempt to kidnap. I'm going to skip a couple of the parts that I think might trigger some keyword searches. certain types of abuse is what they're referring to, or an attempt to kill, a fine in accordance with this title, and imprisonment for any term of years for life, term of years or for life, or both, or maybe sentenced to death. 2, if bodily injury results from the acts committed in violation of the sex, or if such acts include the use, attempted use, or threatened use of a dangerous weapon. Again, an officer with their pew-pew machine counts as a threatened use, even if it stays holstered. Explosives or fire, a fine in accordance with this title, blah, 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 may be imposed. No prosecution of any offense described in this section shall be undertaken by the United States except upon the notification in writing of the Attorney General or his designee that in his judgment, a prosecution by the United States is in the public interest and necessary to secure substantial justice. As used in this section, the term religious property means any church, synagogue, mosque, religious cemetery, or other religious property. Wow. There is so much protection, you guys, that we have here. And if only we knew. I'm hoping that the research I've put into this episode, maybe I can turn into an ebook or at least some kind of PDF. But maybe we can turn it into some sort of teaching tool to help educate our church leaders and the leadership and ownership so that what happened in 2020 does not ever happen again. All right, I'm going to close this page. We're going to move on to case law. Some of these, I am going to read each of the opinion points because they're a little bit shorter. And some of them I will be just picking because some of them are pages and pages and pages long. The first one I want to touch on is Pierce versus Society of Sisters. Hold on, why is it? I minimized that a little bit. And then, that's where I had changed the size of my screen and it was acting kind of funny. All right. In Pierce versus Society of Sisters, for the appeals from the District Court of the United States for the District of Oregon, the syllabus. One, fundamental theory of liberty upon which all governments of this union rest excludes any general power of the state to standardize its children by forcing them to accept instruction from public teachers only. Now, you guys, if you want to be educating your children through your church or establish one that's a children's ministry, basically, or an academy, this protects your right to do that. The next one is specific to Oregon, but I'm sure they're similar for each state. The Oregon Compulsory Education Act, which, with certain exemptions, requires every guardian or other person having control of a child between the ages of 8 and 16 years to send him to the public school in the district where he resides for the period during which the school is held for the current year, is an unreasonable interference with the liberty of the parents and guardians to direct the upbringing of the children, and in that respect, violates the 14th Amendment. Man, that one I should be sharing in the Defeat the Doctrine of Parents Patriarchy Facebook group. Number three, in a proper sense, it is true that corporations cannot claim for themselves the liberty guaranteed by the 14th Amendment. And in general, no person in any business has such an interest in possible customers as to enable him to restrict exercise of proper power by the state on the ground that he will be deprived of patronage. So in this section, this is where the parents have the right to oversee and choose the education of their children as they see fit. So if you're creating or if you have an education-based ministry, it's the parents' job still to opt their children out of their local or their state's education system because they're the ones that have to oversee it. It's not your job to oversee it. It's their job to make sure whoever is doing the actual educating is doing what the parents want them to do. Now, no, we're not corporations. We're not incorporated, but entities are not the same as men and women. Entities do not hold or have the same rights as men and women do. Humans, right? And that's why this is significant. Number four, but where corporations owning and conducting schools are threatened with destruction of their business and property through the improper and unconstitutional compulsion exercised by the statute upon parents and guardians, their interest is direct and immediate and entitles them to protection by injunction. 5. The act being intended to have general application cannot be construed in its application to such corporations as exercise the power to amend their charters. Where the injury threatened by an unconstitutional statute is present and real before the statute is to be effective and will become irreparable if relief to be postponed to that time, a suit to restrain future enforcement of the statute is not premature. It does go on, but that very first one is really the main one. I guess the first two. We have the liberty to oversee our kids' education. Elsewhere in Pierce versus Society of Sisters, it says that the private domain is called a sanctuary from unjustified interference by the state. Where I get this information from is supreme.justcom. So it's supreme, like Supreme Court, period, Justia, J-U-S-T-I-A.com. And you can use the search function and search Pierce versus Society of Sisters. And that one's 268 U.S. 510 from the year 1925. I am definitely not going to get through this entire list today. Maybe we'll make this a two-part series. The next one I want to quote is Murdoch versus Pennsylvania. So I'm going to close Pierce. Here's Murdoch. And that one is all about the fact that you cannot convert a right into a privilege. So in the very beginning of it, a municipal ordinance which, as construed and applied, requires religious colporteurs, basically sellers, like door-to-door salesmen, requires religious salesmen to pay a license tax as a condition to the pursuit of their activities, invalid under the federal constitution as a denial of freedom of speech, press, and religion. I'm going to skip. Number 4, a state may not impose a charge for the enjoyment of a right granted by the federal constitution. Number 5, the flat license tax here involves restraints in advance the constitutional liberties of press and religion and inevitably tends to suppress their exercise. The fact that the ordinance is non-discriminatory in that it applies also to peddlers of wares and merchandise is immaterial. The liberties guaranteed by the First Amendment are in a preferred position. You guys, this is saying that our First Amendment rights take precedence over anything else. Pierce versus Society of Sisters. Know it. Memorize it. I only read 2 or 3 of the lines, and this one is really long. It's Murdoch versus Pennsylvania, 319 U.S. 105 from the year 1943. I'm not going to read Shuttlesworth versus Birmingham. It's supposed to say the same thing, but when I was searching, there are several cases with that name, and honestly, I just ran out of time to determine which of the cases cites the same kind of thing that you can't convert a right into a permitted or licensed thing with a fee. So that's your homework. Go to supreme.justia.com and search Shuttlesworth versus Birmingham. There's like 4 or 5 different cases. They're all pretty good. I've looked at 2 or 3 of them, but definitely check it out because it also pertains to your religious liberties and your ability to peaceably assemble in the public. All right, I'm going to close this one. Next one, Roberts versus USJC's 468 U.S. 609 from the year 1984. This one you're going to want to search for the key term constitutional shelter. This one also is very long. Oh, I just clicked on something. Dang it. Of course. Constitutional shelter. Here we go. Moreover, the constitutional shelter afforded such relationships reflects the realization that individuals draw much of their emotional enrichment from close ties with others. Protecting these relationships from unwarranted state interference, therefore, safeguards the ability independently to define one's identity that is central to any concept of liberty. Wow. So it calls our rights a constitutional shelter. It also cites constitutional shelter one other place, and I'm going to scroll to it. The court analyzes Minnesota's attempt to regulate the JC's membership using a test that I find both overprotective of activities undeserving of constitutional shelter and underprotective of important First Amendment concerns. Sorry, I realized that if I breathe in through my nose when I'm talking instead of in through my mouth, my throat doesn't get as dry. So that's the reason for the big pauses. The court declares that the JC's right of association depends on the organization's making a substantial showing that the admission of unwelcome members, quote, will change the message communicated by the group's speech. I am not sure what showing the court thinks would satisfy its requirement of proof of a membership message connection, but whatever it means, the focus on such a connection is objectionable. So this part is saying that you have a right to associate above the requirement to not discriminate, really, especially in a private association. In public, that's different, but in a private group like the JCs, where you have to become a member to attend, we have rights, you guys. We have rights. This is why private membership association is so important, or a private unincorporated church is so important, because it's private. And our rights trump discrimination, really. And I'm not saying that in a bad way. I'm not saying we should discriminate because of color or, you know, gender, but if it's a men's group and that group needs to be protected for the integrity of their purpose, their reason for existing, it needs to be protected. And remember that our rights to privacy end where another's begins. And we know that case law, at least yes, I've shared it before, but no U.S. Supreme Court decision has objected to our right to privacy in our Bill of Rights freedoms, except in a case where there's a clear and present danger of substantive evil. If there is severe neglect and harm that's happening, that is an exception. That's where private becomes public. All right. Next one, because I know we only have 5 minutes left. I'm only going to do one more. I'm going to quote these really quick so you can keep looking at them. Maybe I'll make this a two episode because there's a lot of good stuff that we didn't even cover yet. I highly recommend studying Thomas vs. Collins, 323 U.S. 516 and 531 from the year 1945. There's two parts that particularly have to do with what we're looking at. If you use the search term free assembly, you'll find those two. You'll also see Schneider versus Smith. Schneider versus Smith. So you guys, there is so much case law. Let me scroll through Baird versus State Bar of Arizona. and Hale versus Henkel. I'm going to read that one for you guys quick, if I can scroll it right. Let me make sure. All right. The individual may stand upon his constitutional rights as a citizen. He is entitled to carry on his private business in his own way. His power to contract is unlimited. He owes no duty to the state or to his neighbors to divulge his business or to open his doors to an investigation so far as it may tend to criminate him. He owes no such duty to the state, since he receives nothing therefrom beyond the protection of his life and property. You guys, that's saying that we owe no duty to the state or our neighbors to share our private business. No duty. If someone comes knocking, tell them they're trespassing unless they have a proper warrant. And if you're properly doing things and protecting privacy, they're not going to get a proper warrant unless they've already been breaking the law, in which case then you have more evidence against them. So trespass them. Tell them that they're not welcome and they need to get off your property. That goes for a church too. A church is not public property. If the church is meeting in a park, like a municipal or a public park, it's different. But the church is private property. You can tell them to scram in a nice way, in a loving Christian way, of course. But tell them to scram. All right. We're definitely making this a two-part series because I had intended to share a whole lot more, wrap this up into like a pretty package. But we covered a lot of the U.S. codes, and we also covered a handful of the case law. So that's going to give you guys a solid foundation. Go back, look up these cases for yourself. Like I said at the beginning, not every case... I'm going to take a sip of water. Not every case is specifically related to your religious liberties, but they are related to religious liberties, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, and freedom of press. All right, I'm going to move back over here and double check my time. All right, I have 40 seconds left. All right, you guys, this has been episode 34 of the Living with Freedom Show. I'm your host, Amber S. from Living with Freedom Ministries. Thank you for tuning in today. Remember to schedule this show in your calendar every Tuesday from 2 to 3:30 Central, noon to 1:30 Pacific. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week where we continue to explore what living a life of freedom looks like physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and in every aspect of life. Have a great day, guys. And of course, there we go. All right, see you guys later.